Welcome to the Land Jam Podcast, a semi-friendly discussion between two blokes on watches, cars, and everything in between. Now, here are your hosts, Tommy and Sanjeev.
Welcome to a Land Jam short, Seiko Urban Safari. I'll be back. Again?
That's right. This week, I think we're going to cover the hot new Seiko release, the Urban Safari Collection, which
includes
the Safari
Seikos?
Tuna and the Safari Arnie. Sorry, Sanj?
Are we hunting Seikos here? Or like, what's going on?
Well, to help us with this, we actually brought our old friend, who appeared a couple episodes back, Roy T, to come back. I know he's a big Seiko fan, so it's very fitting to have him on here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys. It's good to be back.
Yeah, so, and we're talking about two models here that are quite closely related. They both are tuna related. They're both technically tuna cased dive watches. So just a quick background, I'll just run through the facts here. The Seiko Urban Safari Tuna. So the original tuna, the 6159-7010, was introduced in 1975. There's been a number of reissues and iterations of the tuna design over the decades. There's actually whole guides online just to understand what all the various tuna releases are and kind of for you to pick, what you would want. Mm-hmm. So the tuna releases that just came out as part of the Seiko Urban Safari, their reference number SRP E29 and SRP E31, both. In both cases, they've got the 4-hour 36 movement, power reserve 40 hours, ticks at 21,600 vibrations per hour. These are relatively large watches, consistent with the tuna, diameter of 43.2 millimeters. The original grandfather tuna that came out in the 70s was actually 50.5.
Wow.
So it was a massive watch.
Wow, that's huge.
So this is, if you think 43 is big, I mean, the grandfather tuna was actually a massive tuna can.
Yeah.
If you're diving, you're going to be stuck at the bottom of the ocean because that baby's going to just drag you down.
Yeah. It's a big hunk of steel. In the case of these Urban Safari tunas, the straps that they're coming with are made of silicon. And the dial and the bezel are color coordinated with the strap. So the E29 is the khaki dial. The E31 is what Seiko is calling the elephant gray dial. Both of these are retailing for about 580 euro. So yeah, Roy, what do you think of the tuna? What are your first thoughts here? I know you're a tuna fan. I know you've kind of been in the market for a tuna for a while.
Yeah.
What do you think of these?
To be honest with you, like on all the specs are fantastic. You know, it's the classic 4R36 movement of the SRP line. So for all of us that have it, it's very familiar. The design, I really like it. I think it's sharp. When they give the product shots on the link that we all have, it really didn't look too enticing to me, to be honest with you. But when I see it actually photographed on a wrist, I really like the elephant gray. It's very nice. You can see that they're definitely tapping into like a fashionable sense, rather than just having it be solely focused on utilitarian. Just contrasting that with the turtle that we have, the SRP 775, or my 311, or even the SKX 009. Everything there in terms of color serves a purpose because of the contrast, right? The red and the blue make it easier to be able to see under different lighting circumstances, see underwater. So with it muted the way it is right now, I mean, I know that it matches the wristband. I don't think it'll serve that function, but in all honesty, I don't think that a lot of the crowd that is going to pick this up is going to be using it for diving circumstances as a primary.
Right. I agree. And I think it's consistent with their street series that they came out with a couple of months back.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I think it's kind of the
exactly.
Of
yeah. They're trying.
I like Seiko's. You know, they're trying something new, you know, a little bit to the conservatives. It's very daring because they're trying a new colorway, let's just say, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's you got to give them credit for that. And they're very the colorways that they picked, you know, they're very stylish. I prefer the khaki tuna. I think that really stands out.
I I like the gray personally. I would probably get the gray, but the khaki is very well executed. And as I mentioned, the straps match the bezel and the dial color. So I would kind of wonder what they would look like off the
exactly straps on like a NATO. Yeah, that was like my that. First thought.
I wonder if that would work. Yeah. not sure, but I think if you're in the market for a tuna, this is a pretty easy one to get. I mean, I know they're 580 euro retailing, but I mean, you know, street price for that will be around $300. I'm assuming $300, $350. So it's a very a much more accessible tuna mechanical than a lot of the other mm-hmm. releases. Definitely more than the Prospects one, which you know runs into the thousands, and also they have a Marine Master.
Oh baby. So,
yeah. So
what? That's the moonshot. That's the moonshot wash for me.
That's the moonshot. So until we reach for the moonshot, I think this is a pretty good way to get some tuna.
I'm calling that one moonshot. The Marine Master Burial at Sea, because I'm going to be tossed off a boat when I'm dead, and I'm going to be wearing that watch.
It'll
anchor you down too.
Who needs cement shoes? I got the Marine Master. I'm going straight to the bottom.
The one thing I wanted to point out is the bezels on these tunas. They don't look like a metal bezel insert to me. They look like it's got like a coating on top.
Like a sheen. Yes. Yeah. I'm not sure what the material is for the bezel. To be honest, I do like the sheen, but I can't tell you what they're actually made.
Exactly.
Out of.
It could be a metal insert with a coating on top. You know, who knows what kind of coating, but it gives a level of depth to the bezel. Actually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. It's visually pretty appealing. Now, the question for both you guys is, what are your thoughts on the handset and what are your thoughts at the 12 o'clock marker? It's a little bit of an iteration. The handset, you know, I think Seiko's gotten some heat over the years for using that fat arrow hour hand. So now they've gone strict baton. It's consistent with the Marine Master series, more or less. What are your thoughts? I like it too.
I mean, it's pretty straightforward. I think the issue with the fat arrow hands is it just makes the watch a little bit odd in terms of the size and the width of that arrow
hand. Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Yeah, I think visually it's a bit of a jump. Yeah. So
the one cool thing they also did is the day-date complication. It has, you know, they made it consistent with a black background with white text.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even notice that. That's really interesting.
The number, it looks like, you know, superb. What? You're right. It's black. I'm sorry. It's a little hard to see on the product shot, but you're right. That's really
and then on the
good
khaki,
and that works. That works even better on the khaki, though. To be honest, it just leaps
right
out at
you.
Whereas in the E31, the gray, gosh, you're barely noticing that. You're paying attention to other details.
Yes,
but on the
29,
boom, immediately my eyes are drawn to the day-date.
I think it's that contrast of the khaki and the black that's used. The other thing I wanted to point out are the indices. On the khaki, it looks like it's got like a faux patina. Maybe it's just my eyes deceiving me, but on the gray elephant or elephant gray, it's more or less on the creamish white side.
Yeah, I see what you're saying from the photographs, and I'm honestly not sure if that's just our eyes playing tricks on us or whether there's actually a difference on the loom color. I think there is a difference.
Sam's right.
So, I didn't even notice that.
It's more yellowish on the khaki, or the safari one.
On the khaki.
But the elephant gray elephant, yeah, it's definitely a lighter shade. It's white. It's in fact matching the background of the webpage if you look at it.
Yeah.
Right. True. So, okay. So, end of the day, is this a recommendation? If you want a tuna, should you get these Urban Safari?
Well, it depends. Like how Roy mentioned it, right? If you're like say into diving and want to use a dive watch, probably you want to pick a different tuna. But if you if you're not diving and wearing,
I mean, this is a fully functional Prospex dive watch. This is not, you're not cutting any corners here, Sam.
I know, but you know, there's not much orange, for example, to it or anything of that matter.
Oh, I know a barb when I hear one. Wow, shots are fired.
Orange. What do you need an orange for? For what?
It's easier to breathe in the underwater. Well, that's what they say. I'm not a diver myself, but
yeah, I don't think that's a much of a factor, to be honest. I mean, it looks cool. That's really why we like orange, but it's not. Then every dive watch would be orange.
Well, I mean,
right?
Look at Doxa.
It's true. It's true. Yeah.
So what I'm trying to say is,
The color is not perfectly suited.
Exactly.
For
I mean, if you're going for a professional tool watch, you know, yeah, these tunas are capable. Don't get me wrong, but
they're prospects.
Yeah, they're prospects. But you know, you probably want something that's even more, like, say, prepared for
task at hand. It's a fully functioning watch on the back end, but on the front end, I don't think it would serve the same function for diving, to be honest with you. I'm speaking of the elephant gray one, the desert one. You know, it's roughly the same, but I think the one thing that we don't know is how does it look underwater. You know, like, if we have a fluorescent light and we're down 100 feet, what does that look like, you know?
Yeah, but you know, I think if you think about them as like very tough field watches, they kind of work. You know, they work really well. Like if you're playing, I don't know, Modern Warfare 2 or Battlefield 4 or something. Like your spec soldier is probably wearing a Seiko tuna, right?
That's true.
All business, you know?
Yeah, I think this is, you're right, Tommy. I think this would be an excellent everyday watch, but this could be like an excellent like field watch.
Yeah, it's probably next to indestructible.
Yeah, and it's got the protector case.
Yeah, it's got the shroud
to justify this.
Yeah. That's terrific.
Yeah.
The shroud. Yeah, and I've seen modifications that people have made for the new Seiko Arnie reissue, where the shroud can be replaced with a steel shroud, and it's a very sharp look. It looks even tougher than the Seiko Arnie that's coming out with the reissue that they came out with. So speaking of the Seiko Arnie, and also part of the reason why this episode's called "I'll Be Back Again." Seiko also decided to re-release the Seiko Arnie in the Seiko Urban Safari line. And similar to the tuna, they come in two colors. The SNJ-029 is a khaki-colored silicon strap, khaki-colored indexes and scales. The SNJ-031 is dark green, silicon strap and shroud. Both watches have an extra long, extra strong plastic shroud. Not extra long, extra strong. And the pushers on the left side, if you notice, and the seconds hand are in red. This is in contrast with the Seiko Arnie reissues that came out earlier this year. So that's a notable design difference. And also the handset and the markers are different from the Seiko Arnie Classic and the Seiko Arnie reissue. But other than that, they both have the same caliber as the recent reissue. It's the caliber H851. And consistent with the Arnie reissues recently, these are 47.8 millimeters in diameter. The prices for these are €530 to start with. So what are our thoughts on these new Arnie?
Well, first, which one would you pick? Which one would you guys pick? We'll start off with our guest, Roy.
What
would you
pick? I would pick the SNJ-031. It's
the dark green
one. I mean, you know, we were just hobnobbing about this before we went live, but I would rather have this in an actual army green finish. If it was more suited like that, I think it would be just the ultimate finish to a field watch. I would just be in love with it. To be honest with you, I like this finish, but it's second to the rose gold Arnie that launched earlier last year. There's nothing to that for me. unless they come out in a military green and you have Arnold actually wearing it in an ad. Then it's guaranteed. I'm just throwing it on the credit card.
One
more thing I wanted to add before we get onto it. You were talking about finishes for the last watch,
And the one thing I wanted to bring up that I didn't realize when we were speaking about it is, if you look at the wristband, the silicone is actually textured on the exterior. You know how sometimes you have those silicone straps and it's the same texture on both sides, the inside and the outside? This is not looking like it. It looks like it's almost like a worn leather kind of look to it. And the inside, I'm sure.
So this is specifically for the tuna.
That's just like another great accent.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not for the tuna, Arnie. Right? It's not for the Arnie.
But for the urban safari. To be honest with you,
I like that. And this, the Arnie one is actually smooth. So it's a little bit of a different approach to the finishes. But overall, I really, you know, you're trading the let's say we don't get the exterior texture silicone band. But look at the finish on the buttons for the red and the red second hand within the watch face. Like, I just love that. It looks terrific to me.
Yeah. It's a little splash of color where the original Arnie and the reissue.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of contrast, and I like that. It's not overpowering. It's just subtle enough.
And similar to the Urban Safari Tuna, the handset is gone to the baton style. I kind of like it
too. It looks a little skinnier than the other one.
Yeah, and
I don't know why.
It could be the size of the watch, because this is actually a bigger watch. Dang.
That's true. The issue with this watch, and it's consistent with the Seiko Arnie reissue, and I was very excited to hear about the reissue, and I was all over it, is that the bloody watch is huge. And I just know that if I bought that watch and wore it, I would like
to be a small child wearing that. No way. And, listen, there's only one watch to top to get into that category, and that's a Fortis, okay? You know, that 56-millimeter diameter.
On the Fortis.
It's like a hubcap.
The Fortis is actually like a 42, I believe.
Yeah, you know what? The 42, I don't think so, man. I think it's closer to 56.
So wait, Sanj, the Fortis is 42 millimeters.
I don't think so. Let me get back.
It's at least a 46 in my mind when I look at it.
All right, fact check.
On par with the big pilot.
In the meantime, Tommy, what would you pick for the Arnie?
Excuse me.
I actually agree with Roy T. I think if you're going to go for the Seiko Arnie reissue, I think the best one to go for either is that rose gold Seiko online special, or the straight reissue that they did with the Arnie, the black and white. I'm not really into the Patty one. But
they're all
frankly,
awesome.
All
yeah,
three
I totally
Seiko
agree.
Arnie reissues look great. Yeah, they're all very attractive. As far as the Urban Safari one, I think green or khaki is a toss-up for me. I do like the splash of red. I think it brings a little bit of a different design aesthetic from the original Arnie. So I like that they updated the indices, and also the dial is updated as well. If you look, the markers are different. They're gone for a more rectangular markers where the old Arnie had the dots.
Yeah, that's kind of reminiscent of the SKX.
The other change they did was the bezel itself. This has got a metal bezel with, I guess, looks like indices inserts, or
painted inserts.
Oh, I see. Compared to the original Arnie, I think that one is a bezel and a metal insert.
Gotcha.
And I actually dig that.
And
I actually really dig that. It gives it a more rugged look to me.
It's nice. I like it. When I look at the shot further down on the webpage in the Fratello magazine. The hand model or the arm model, now that I see it actually on human skin, it looks a lot more green, wouldn't you say, than the product shot? The product shot, it looks kind of ambiguous as to the color. I couldn't tell if it was a green or if it was a dark charcoal. You know, it's clearly green when you look at it. It's like a dark, dark hunter kind of green on the model's wrist.
Yeah. And assuming this guy's assuming this guy isn't huge, maybe this watch is wearable.
I think so too.
So for Roy, it's the dark green. For Tommy, it's a toss-up. But if you had to pick one.
I'd probably go with green. I think green is more flexible than khaki, to be honest. Yeah. But I like the khaki too. The real answer is Prosecco rose gold.
I actually like this setup versus the green. To be honest with you. Really? Yeah, I'll probably go for the green, but I just like the little details, like the red pushers and the different indices and the bezel itself.
Gotcha. So if people actually want to take a look at the functionality of this watch, there's a great video by Mark at Long Island Watches, and he actually goes through all the various functions in the Seiko Arni reissue. It's an extremely, extremely useful watch. I mean, you're talking separate time zones, you're talking chronographs, you're talking alarms. It does pretty much everything.
Like, listen, if it's good enough for John Matrix, it's good enough for us.
That's right, Colonel Matrix. I just watched Commando the other day, and watching Commando, I keep getting reminded that every time there's a close-up shot of the watch and the countdown to save his daughter, the prop guys took out the dial to the Seiko Arni and put in a fake dial.
Yeah.
And they did that because they wanted to make it obvious it was a countdown. I don't know why. The Seiko Arni has a countdown feature, doesn't it? Why couldn't they just use it? Why go through the effort? It's like really kind of silly. But every time there's a faraway shot, you're seeing a Seiko Arni. So, you know, that's good. Like when, especially that montage scene when he gets to the island and he starts like strapping up with the weapons and the flak jacket and everything. You see clear shots of the Seiko Arni. It's like that is freaking badass. But anytime there's a close-up, it's not the Seiko Arni.
I mean, think about it. That Seiko Arni survived a jump from a plane taking off.
It also helped break a guy's neck just before he left the plane.
That's true.
Please don't.
Don't wake up my friend. He's dead tired.
He's dead tired. Do me a favor. Don't disturb my friend. He's dead tired.
It's this content that we have Roy
exactly.
Podcast
I mean,
for.
In truth, this is how we plan our podcast between Tommy and I.
Who can do a good Arni impression? Roy T. All right, let's call him up. All right, so I think that covers the Urban Safari collection. I just had an interesting video I wanted to plug in Streaming Goals. It's by a guy whose YouTube channel is called Dark Docs. He does a lot of interesting stories about history, and this one's about aviation. This is the case of Iraq in the 80s was desperate for strike aircraft, and they couldn't afford the top. They wanted a French strike aircraft to use the new Exocet missile, which we talked about last week, Sanj, in the Falklands episode. So they actually bought a business jet, and they converted that business jet into basically a fighter jet. And they used this business jet to attack an American ship by accident, allegedly. And, you know, they apologized for it. But it's an interesting story. It's kind of like quite an interesting engineering kind of detour that the French engineers took to convert a business jet into a fighter jet and being able to, you know, deliver something at the Exocet. So it's an interesting story. I'll put a link to it on the show notes.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I never came across this story at all. And when you first talked about it, I was like, what?
The Salt Falcon 50 business jet that was converted into a strike aircraft. Yeah, it's pretty mind-boggling that they could even get it done. And, you know, they carried it out and they got away with it. And, you know, allegedly it was an error, but it was a big diplomatic incident. It was called the Stark incident. The USS Stark was hit. So,
what is that on, by the way? Netflix, Amazon?
Story. So,
it's on YouTube.
Okay. I'll put the link in the show notes.
It was a YouTube content creator that got his own documentary put up on one of the streaming channels. Oh, okay.
No. So the guy actually runs two channels, as far as I know, Dark Docs and Dark Skies, and he does a very good job, very, very good production value. He does a lot of good research, and very interesting stories that I haven't heard before. I like
your story.
So yeah, definitely check it out. Yeah.
So
all right. Well, thanks again.
A fact check.
Yeah?
On my Cosmonaut.
before we go,
I would like to confirm that
42. Wow.
That
are you talking about the diameter of just the watch face, or are you talking bezel to bezel? or like end to end?
I believe it's bezel. The bezel is how they measure it.
You got to add another 2 inches on that thing, man. I'm telling you, it ends up as 56 in the end. It's 56. It's like Flavor Flav has a clock on his neck. Santa has a clock on his wrist.
That's pretty much it. Well, I was thinking when Santa has a flat, he basically gets the lug nuts out, takes the wheels out.
He just,
like, oh man,
he just is gonna strap, I guess I'll put the Ford nuts on the damn flat tire. rolling home on this donut.
Oh, it'll sure survive that too.
When he gets home, he just takes it off.
Listen, if it can survive as a hammer on the International Space Station, as Babel goes,
this is his favorite story.
It's amazing. Yep. You know, if it was a Speedy, the crystal will pop off. And
there's only one place the Speedy's been that the Fortis has never been. Any idea where that is, French? Right, the goddamn moon. All right. On that note, thank you for joining us for another episode of the Land Grab.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
Talk soon.